Yo, what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic interview. It is your host, Cody, your Cape Crusader. We are joined by my good friend, Wells Thompson. We're going to be breaking down Frankenstein the Unconquered issue number one, an action horror comic. Wells, welcome to the live stream. How are you doing, dude? I really appreciate it. You reached out to me maybe 2 days ago and was like, yo, let me on. And I'm like, yes, like I checked out the Kickstarter, instantly, like just fell in love with this. And I'm stoked for you coming on such short notice, man. How are you and welcome?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, no, I was excited to come on the show. We were on a space together and just seemed like a really fun energy. And like you had a lot to bring to the space, so to speak.
Yeah, like, and it's really interesting because it's unique what works and what doesn't, and like how things work. Like the fact that we both like were, you know, I got on there because Stokes, you got on there. I'm not sure who you seen was on there and joined, but it takes is just that sort of interaction and just vibing. You know, we weren't there to like impress each other. We were there like working with one another, you know what I mean? Giving ideas. And dude, the space like was just, it's such a, I guess an underutilized tool, you know?
It is. I think it's, I mean, like, you know, all tools are like a hammer. You can build a house with it. You can break someone's skull, but you gotta, you just gotta learn how to
touché,
use it properly.
Touche.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Yeah, let's just start breaking into it. This is, you said it was driven from a previous title that you did with your co-writer, Descent into Dread. So I felt like maybe we would touch a little base upon that, kind of what it's about, how this, that created this. But we'll save some of the guts, because I think we were talking previously about maybe potentially doing a second show down the line covering that with your co-creator. So, I mean, let's go ahead and just talk about the basis of what created Frankenstein the Unconquered.
Right. Frankenstein the Unconquered was basically a writing exercise. At first, it was like, you know, me and my friend are out of college. We're not doing anything. We're frustrated. We're, you know, trying to break into a scene that we have no idea what the actual, like, landscape of is. And and so we just start going, okay, how can we tell a story in 8 pages? You know, how can we write, like, we want to write comics long term. Let's try and get good at the short format before we do anything else. So the first one that Dalton wrote was Frankenstein the Unconquered, The Beast Returned. And like we wrote that, and it was just like him spinning off of like his love of Conan and Frankenstein and like old school like 70s 80s kind of comics, that heavy narration style, heavy brooding action kind of thing. And then we write like two or three of those, and I'm like, and shortly like into that process, I went to Dragon Con, which is a pop culture convention in Atlanta. It's massive. And what I saw was like, there were a lot of vendors there that were like selling books, but there wasn't a lot of vendors selling like I wanted to get something from everyone, but obviously money is cheap. So I was like, well, if there's something here that's like, was like $1 or $2, I would just pick it up without thinking about it.
Yeah.
And so I went back to Dalton and I was like, what if we went to like local cons and did this? Little did I know I was tapping into something that was a lot older than this conversation. It was, it's like, that's what zine culture is, as it turns out.
We had
never seen that. So we did that. We drew and lettered ourselves, like 4 comics, and then went to a bunch of small shows in Arkansas. And
so, I mean, like,
generally okay.
Did you published it like through a publisher, or did you guys like
no this was DIY 100%. Like how many
books did you do like that?
I think we got to number 4s. So we had 4 categories. We did Frankenstein the Unconquered was his own book, and then Descent into Dread was the horror series. And then, what was it? Cosmic was our sci-fi one. And Age of Adventure was the all-ages blind. And I think we did up to number 4 of all of them except for 1. So that's like 15 books that we made. before we.
Well, how many copies of each book? Like, if you had an estimate.
Oh, that's a good question. I wish we had kept better track of that sort of thing.
Because that just seems insane. Like, I gotta give you guys kudos because that just seems wild to do it yourself like that.
I added it up at one point. I think we had sold about. This was in the summer of 2019. Summer of 2019, before I moved to Nashville, we had sold about 600 books, something like that, for $2 each at the conventions. Yeah.
So what did your average day look like doing this?
Like
getting ready to make the book. Not even the selling process, the do-it-yourself process. Like, I want to hear about that, because that just seems like it would be rough.
So it was definitely a lot rougher at first, because we were trying to literally print it ourselves at first, and that turned into a big dead end very, very quickly, because printing is hard, just in general, and expensive. Yeah. But, like, printing, like, a pamphlet style, like a book... It isn't just like a matter of printing one page at a time. You have to print on both sides, and each page has two pages on it. So trying to get it right where they're both right side up. Oh no, it was such a headache. But we figured out really quickly that we could go to like a local printer and just say, hey, we want 3 pages double-sided, so 6 impressions total, and in a pamphlet style, stapled black and white. And
did they get tired of you guys after a while?
No, we gave them good money. They offered to give us a discount if we put their name in the back of the book, so that was kind of cool. But
did you guys do that?
Yeah, of course.
Dude,
we did.
Yes, man. Oh my god. So not only did you guys find a way to like just hit the streets with it, but you got a low key sponsorship out of it. Like, do you have one of those?
No, not on me. I have a couple of them framed downstairs. I don't have any on me right now.
No, you're good. You're good. I was going to say, man, because that's definitely like that. That's awesome, dude. Because I talked to a couple people and they definitely had some selling comics out of the trunk, but like not going to like a printer like that and doing that like type of stories. Like, so how did it feel to evolve from that?
I mean, it's been really spectacular. It's been like a constant like moving forward. I don't know like how to take a vacation. I really need to learn that. So it's just always been like we're doing this, and then we when we were at one of these conventions, we met an editor for Caliber Comics, and we started talking to him, and he was like, "This art is not good, but the stories are pretty good." And I was like, "Yeah, I don't know what to do about that."
He goes,
"Pay an artist."
Yeah.
So we started, you know, from there we started working on compiling them into this book, Descent into Dread. Which is, like I said, the first appearance of Frank that looks any good anyway. The first appearance is drawn like by Dalton, and it's a little rough around the edges. I don't think he would have any problems telling you that, but like, yeah, this was our guy named Andrea drew this
this guy.
And it looks pretty good.
Sometimes you need
Mary Landro, but yeah.
You need someone to kind of just be brutal with you. I mean, do you think you would have like how long would it have taken you to get an artist like without that dude coming and saying that to you?
I think we would have landed there eventually. Like, I don't know how long we would have waited before we realized that like we're artistically not there.
Because it's almost like a shortcut. You know what I mean? Because like. You want to keep doing what you're doing, and then like you find out the hard way. But then that one guy is just like, "Hey, listen, I don't sugarcoat it. Like this sucks.
Yeah.
Hire someone," and you're like, "You know, that's a third party."
He's kind of right, yeah.
Because you don't want to hurt your friend's feeling, and he doesn't want to hurt yours, right? Like,
right, obviously. And we've always been very like honest and upfront with each other. I've definitely sent him some stories where he's gone, "Well, no, what the fuck is this? This is bad." And I had to be like, cool, thank you. Not gonna waste my time on this anymore. But yeah, it's really important to like get that kind of out of the way where someone's just like, here's what you're good at, here's what you're bad at, focus on what you're good at. And yeah, we started financing this guy out of pocket, and that led to an experience. Like, it hasn't been like a super successful publication, but we have a published book, you know. Mm-hmm.
And that
felt like a massive step for us.
And a sponsor for it, dude.
Yeah, no, and I mean, like, it's Caliber
Comics. Was that totally
like,
or was that a totally different thing?
That was wait, the sponsor, what?
One that gave you 15% off?
Yeah. No, that was a printer, which was like, okay. That was cool. Doing it DIY, great. Like, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And then we started hiring artists, and we like gotten an actual like Caliber Comics is an indie press.
Yeah,
like,
it's
a real thing. And that felt really, really good.
So how did that happen? When did you contact them, or did they reach out to you?
No, like I said, we met the editor at a convention. We were doing conventions that I was telling you about. We were trying to sell our books. Mm-hmm. I think we were at Wizard World New Orleans, which is way too big of a show for us to have been at that time. But we were like too green to know that at the time.
Sometimes you got to take that bite too. I mean, because think about it. If you wouldn't have been there at that moment, you probably wouldn't have, you know, ran into them.
Yeah, exactly. No, it was a great chance meeting. And Andrea has been a really cool guy that's helped us out a lot since then too. So we started working on that, and once we like got it published and got it out there and sort of hit the sort of brutal realization that like just because we have a book doesn't mean people are gonna buy it. Like that, like it's on Amazon. No one's gonna search for it unless we tell them to search for it.
Yeah.
And we were like, okay, so what can we do? Like, what can we do for our next book? And we had a couple of ideas. What we landed on is, okay, like we should probably do like something small and bite-sized, something serialized, you know, a monthly comic or mm-hmm. or a floppy, so to speak. Not monthly, but and that was when I started paying attention really hard to Kickstarter, and I'm like, this is not like, this isn't really stigmatized anymore. You know, it used to be if you were on Kickstarter, it was like, what? You know, why are you buying a comic on Kickstarter? It's like,
yeah.
That's gonna be garbage. But like, that's just not the case anymore.
Dude, you're 100% right though. Like when I first started this, like I would say before I started doing indie comic interviews, I had a similar mindset. Like, mm-hmm. why would I spend $10 on this when I can get like a DC book for like $5?
Yeah, you get DC it for $4 at the store, and that's a guaranteed professional quality.
But the thing is, though, like
yeah,
you can't put a price and like I guess a label on what you guys offer because you don't have that DC label, you know. And I bring this up, you know, a lot, but I think it's important to bring up. Like, you guys literally have to like fight for this. You have to go and stretch your comfort zone. You can't just be like at DC, call up someone and be like, hey, I want to get this, and you know, I don't know what the process is, but I'm sure it's a lot easier. Get the marketing for it, you know, with DC behind them than it is indie, you know.
Having it in every comic shop in America is definitely gonna boost your sales.
Yeah,
it's definitely gonna get more eyeballs on it. So we started working on, we went through a very painful process of like trying to find artists and work on an idea that we had for a little while, which was Mechaton, which is our first Kickstarter book, this one. And it's like a very like sci-fi rule of cool, like Scott Pilgrim meets Pacific Rim.
So whose idea was this? I know you said Frankenstein kind of was born from. Yeah.
So like it sounds like a broken record because a lot of the stuff that we've been doing is like ideas that Dalton had in like, you know, high school that him mm-hmm. and his buddies worked on and could never figure out, and then he just kept talking about him, and I was like, fuck, why don't we work on that? I actually am currently working on my own comic, like as a script right now that will eventually make its way to Kickstarter. I promise I have original ideas.
Hey, you got a name for it?
Box of Bones.
Ooh,
yeah.
So we're getting a little bit of a drop.
Yeah, no, I mean that's a long way off. I'm not, and we have, oh god, we have so much crap to that we still have to like make. But
so is that gonna be because I think when we were talking during that space is like, hey man, we're gonna break into this too. Like, is that gonna be in the same universe as this, or is that gonna be something that's gonna be completely broken away?
Completely different. That's completely different. Like, right. I love cinematic universes. I love when mm-hmm. things are connected, but that's not generally how we operate. No, Mechaton was like just a. It was basically just a bunch of guys together, like, oh, what if this cool thing happened? We were like, what if a glove punched a. What if, like, you had a glove that punched something and then that thing turned into a robot? And then
we... That would be pretty fucking awesome.
Right? No. And that's the premise. He punches, like, in the first one, he punches a hot dog stand and it turns into,
Dude, yeah, I'm really digging the art, too.
Oh, yeah. Fernando Pinto is the artist on this. He's so good. I absolutely adore this book and everything that it's turning into.
So that was kind of like the stepping stone in between, like from where the idea for Frankenstein was born and then to where you got. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. What was
your I was just gonna say it's all been like kind of building up, and this mm-hmm. is our third campaign. We learned a lot on Mechaton. Both on like how to make a book and how to make a book.
What's your cat's name?
Quelag. This is Quelag.
Oh, so you're a Soulsborne fanatic.
Absolutely, I am.
Dude, check it out, my man. I see. I tell you, we get the buddy vibe going on in this game.
Oh, hell yeah. Little Crystal Lizard, dude. Love that.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
No, I fucking love that name for your cat. My cat is a big, fat lard laying up in the window snoozing right now.
Oh, God. Some more of a phalanx.
Yeah. Did you get a chance to play Elden Ring?
Yes, I am playing the hell out of Elden Ring right now.
Where are you at right now with it?
I just went to the mountaintop of the giants.
Okay, you're getting there. You're getting there.
Yeah, I just fought the big, the ice dragon on, like, the lake of ice.
Mm-hmm. Which was a pain in the ass. Yes.
Oh, my God.
It was like Seathless the Dragon on crack.
Oh, God. It was...
But the thing is, like, I had no dishonor in fighting on horseback, because that's what it was meant for, you know?
No,
it was like...
no. Absolutely not.
I was playing on PS5. I did, I'm dual wielding, what is it? The Ultra Greatsword and then a Grafted Greatsword. So I'm doing, like, a Ooga Booga strength build.
Yeah.
Like, 65 strength, 40 vigor, and then, like, 40 endurance.
I'm doing a heavy faith build. So I do have the Blasphemous Blade on. I've got the Winged Scythe and the scythe that takes forever to farm that shoots out halos.
So what do you play on?
PS4.
Dude, so this is actually a Bloodborne shirt.
Oh,
this
nice.
The Dao right there, the Maiden, and then this is mm-hmm. the what is it called? The hidden boss. Moon Presence. So right here, yeah. It's I actually got it. What was it from? It's like a Teespring. You know, one of those, like, it's like $20. It, after a couple washes, it faded. But it was cool because, like, Soulsborne merch is, like, so expensive.
It is.
This cost me $40, this little lizard.
I believe
and the light died after, like, 2 months. So, let's reel it back, man. Let's reel it back. I had to ask because the cat name, dude.
No. That's my baby.
So, don't want to ask you the questions you've already been asked, because I'm sure you've been asked why Frankenstein, you know, why, you know.
Oh,
because
it's cool. That's
but
why.
What made you want to go into the future with him? Like, is there any sort of, like, symbolism behind that? Because I know you said he finds a bombed out apocalypse as hideous and broken as he is. Is there any sort of, like, deeper meaning behind that, or is it... Were you guys just running with it?
So it was sort of a beautiful accident for the most part. Mechaton too. So the way Dalton and I operate a lot of the time is that he'll sort of set up not like a world necessarily, but he'll come up with a cool idea, and his whole thing is like, we need to get this going as fast as possible. And then I'll do things like I'll say, oh, you know, with all this going on, I feel like there's a big theme of like destruction of the environment and sort of toxic masculinity and violence as a mode of survival. And he's like, yeah, I was thinking about that. That sounds plausible. Like we work together really well because he makes it fun and I make it like substantive.
Mm-hmm.
Which we feed off of each other in that way, and I think we've made each other better in that regard. But yeah, no. So he came to me with this project, and he's like, you know, this is about Frankenstein and he is going to beat the crap out of like the Wolfman and the Invisible Man and all sorts of universal horror monsters. And it's in the future and it's very like Conan the Barbarian and post-apocalyptic and Mad Max. And I'm like, okay, so, all right, why and how? He's like, I don't know. I figured like, you know, at the end of the novel, he like goes into the Arctic and freezes and eventually he's going to thaw. And I'm like,
do all the other ones freeze too, though?
No. So no, because like the logic isn't at the forefront of this. I'll be completely honest.
No, that, no, that's fine. And you know, that this very well could be.
It is both a direct sequel to Mary Shelley's like novel, which is to say, like, so Frankenstein was a scientist. He made this thing. Events ensue. And eventually he dies in the Arctic and the monster claims him and burns the body and freezes to death. But then what happens next? Well, eventually he thaws out. And what kind of a world does that look like?
Okay. No, I got you. I got you.
It's the kind of a world where there are like, you know, atomically mutated people that turn into werewolves and, you know, the kind of like hideous deformations and burns that might make someone wear a phantom mask or you know, so like it's not shoehorning, it's just like finding creative ways to sort of bring in the entire like universal horror, that kind of iconography into
Ever run into any issues doing that though, like I'm not familiar and I do want to touch base on some of your experiences because you know you come from learning about screenwriting and doing that sort of thing as well. But do you run into sort of any issue with like copywriting or infringement? Are these like properties like open for that type of interpretation?
So it is sort of beautiful in that regard because these properties are very much like, what's the word for it? Not open source, but public domain. So, like, Frankenstein has been published for over 200 years. It is public domain. Anyone can do it. That's why Universal can make a movie, like, based on that character.
Yeah.
That's why anyone can make a Dracula property. That's why anyone can make, a Phantom of the Opera property.
But something maybe, Pennywise, they couldn't because it's...
Sure, yeah. No, that was published. It's like, 70 years after the author's death, I think, is when it becomes public domain. So that's like the technical, but what isn't copyrighted is, or what is copyrighted, what you can't do is like the green skin, the bolts, the forehead, the scar. That is Boris Karloff Universal Frankenstein.
So man, you're probably just waiting for some of these horror creators, just the, you know, when's that clock ticking? Come on. Let me ask you this though.
Not to be that cynical.
If you could add any horror icon that from anywhere, no matter you know, the copyright infringement or not, who would you want to add and why?
That's a pretty good question. Predator is pretty cool. I feel like he would fit like exclusively because
a warrior
meets it's like the Arnold Schwarzenegger horror action, you know, just like combination of everything. But I'm trying to think of like an old school like horror icon that wouldn't I want to like maybe the Xenomorph. That one's like a little specific. I don't know, like a lot of the really old ones
you could probably do some really cool stuff from like Evil Dead too.
But yeah, maybe a Deadite. And we will, you know, references are always a thing.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, one of the fun things you could do in a Frankenstein the Unconquered would be like the Babadook. That'd be pretty funny. The gothic horror with the top hat and everything. Mm-hmm, I feel like that would are the yeah that that German expressionist kind of look to it would just like clash so much with the style of the book. It would kind of be it'd be really striking in and of itself.
So yeah, we end up with Frankenstein. He's in a post-apocalyptic world. How does he end up with a sword? You know, let's go ahead and start, I guess, molding this, and then we'll jump into your Kickstarter. But how's he end up with a sword? What's his deal with wanting to kill everything that he sees? And like, what is he going to be up against? Like, what type of adversaries is he going to be going up against? And like, what ultimately is his goal?
You know, sure.
In the future, you know, what's he doing?
So, to answer the first question, why does he have a sword? And this is the answer to a lot of how we direct the Frankenstein universe. It's or the Frankenstein the Unconquered universe, because it's cool. It was cool to have him have a sword, so we wanted him. So we made him have a sword. It just felt right.
Yeah.
Our philosophy was, if it belongs on the cover of a Megadeth album, then it belongs in Frankenstein the Unconquered. The premise is, he not just like he wakes up and starts going, you know, absolutely crazy, like ham on everybody. Quite the opposite. He thaws from the ice, and he encounters people who aren't afraid of him, because as like awful as he looks and as hideous as, you know, if you've read the original novel, like anyone that sees him immediately freaks out and assumes he's a monster and wants to kill them. But you know, in a bombed out post-apocalypse where everyone is mutated and like actual monsters are roving everywhere, he doesn't come across as anything like particularly special at first.
He's because just they're like big, desensitized to it, probably.
Yeah, he's just a big dude. So he wakes up and people are like, "Hey, how are you? Okay, how are you doing?" So he initially is like, "Maybe this is a place where I can find peace." And he tries to live a peaceful life, but a couple of years ago, I had a really fascinating conversation. Like, it was the 200th anniversary of the novel being published in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Dragon Con. There was like a panel of horror writers and experts, and they were talking about like kind of the unspoken nature of the monster and how he like claims that, you know, if he had only been treated right, he would, you know, not have been so monstrous and murdered those people. And it's like, that's the same thing that like abusers say about the people that they are abusing. It's like, that's sort of broken logic. It's not, this world is so broken and therefore I have to act out. It's like, you acted out because there's something wrong with you that you're not addressing. So he thinks that he can find peace there, but when like conflict arises, he immediately turns to violence because that's what he knows to do.
So what's he not addressing, though? You know,
I mean, I that's sort of what we're exploring in I think
I got you. I got you.
Thing is, like, is there something in him that like he wants to be special and he wants to be different at the same time that he wants to be accepted and normal, and that causes a tension in him that can't really be resolved unless he's willing to sort of face those demons himself.
Do you think any of that comes from like maybe you or Dalton, like your guys' experiences growing up? I know it's kind of hard to speak for Dalton without him here, but
I'm sure. No, I'm Dalton is like, Dalton's a very cool dude. I think that was something we wanted to explore, is like sort of this Fight Club level of like what every guy wants to be, but also gotcha. Like that is not good for anybody to be that, and that's just interesting to explore in the character. I think every guy on Earth like experiences some level of like, I don't know what it means to be a man.
Oh Jesus!
To,
yeah,
and has to do some kind of proving like himself.
I remember, the first time I because I took a few moments. I realized there was something wrong with me, and you know, yeah. I went and seen a therapist. I remember going to a therapist, and I was like, dude, I feel like a wimp because like guys aren't supposed to talk about their feelings. Guys aren't supposed to do this. Like, this is everything I was raised against. Like, what the hell? But I think it's really important to do that, though, to break down that wall and discover that side of you, because I mean, with or without a therapist, you know?
Right. What I'm saying is Frank needs therapy.
Yeah, and, yeah, yeah.
But he's not willing to go there, and so he you know, starts turning to violence and going to conquest and pursuing a life of, like, being the biggest, baddest motherfucker out there. And it goes well at first, and then it goes poorly, and he gets launched into space, and when he fights his way back, 30 years have passed on Earth, and he has a list of people that he finds at fault, and he's crossing names off his list, Kill Bill style.
So does this happen, like, I guess before we're introduced
to
him?
So when at the beginning, the opening pages of Frankenstein the Unconquered, you can see on the page in our sample pages, the sky explodes, a comet rains down, Frankenstein smashes into the earth and picks up where he left off.
Are you so any plans in the future to kind of, I guess, shine, or is this like directly from where you guys let off, or are you gonna ever go back and, I guess, explore on that more?
Oh yeah, no. So it's the comic deals with, like, that is happening in the present, and also, like, we see Frank's past when he first when he first thaws up. It's like we're doing both kind of simultaneously.
I gotcha.
Kind of catch us up slowly on there.
So I was gonna ask this, because, dude, it's crazy. Yeah. Fight Club has gotten brought up surprisingly a lot this week. What was your takeaway on Fight Club? I guess, like, because everybody, I feel like every dude watches that movie. But, like, everyone perceives it in such a different manner.
Radically different way. I think it's a great critique on this sort of aggrieved entitlement that a lot of, like, you know, straight white dudes experience. Mm-hmm. This sort of, like, I was raised to believe that, you know, the world would give me everything I asked for. And that isn't coming true, and we need to kind of realize, you know, why that is. And I think the answer is that was an unfair ask. Like, that was never true. The promise was never made to people who don't look like me. And the fact that it's not happening to me isn't, like, a great crime on me. It's a problem with, like, how the world treats everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But when people think that the promise should have been kept, and that, like, something is being taken away from them by someone else, that's when they turn into Tyler Durden and start.
Yeah, that's
a
fucking insane take. I love it, dude. That's so deep. Yeah, that is so deep. Like, for me, like, it was basically like corporation greed. You know, like, corporations want to use, you know, like, for me, I'm a Twitch streamer. You know, these nanomes cost every bit of, like, $200 for seven of them. I got a waffle. You know, I fell into that corporation greed. I didn't need them. You know, the Elgato branding, a lot of my stuff's Elgato branding. It's like the IKEA scene where he's just buying all these IKEA things to fill his life because this corporation greed's trying to feed him a fairy tale life. Like you were saying, the life that he felt like he was entitled to. And when he gets it, he doesn't feel anything from it because he's still void within.
Yeah. And I think there is legitimate, like, criticism there. Corporations take, like, advantage of people all the time, and
the pharmaceutical one especially, dude. Holy fuck.
I mean, you can't trip over an industry in without finding, like, a laundry list of things that they are, of, like, environmental hazards and labor violations, and like when a fine for, like, breaking the law becomes the cost of doing business, something is deep.
Thank you.
Fucked up.
It, then, like, it's just an extortion at that point. It's not.
Exactly.
It's not protecting us. It's just us. Besides, here's my big fat boy, Miggy.
Aw.
He's a tough
boy. What a boy.
Yeah. His name's derived from Parasite, the anime. So, Miggy.
Oh yeah. No, I have seen, like, quite a bit of, like, material from Parasite, and I saw the anime came up on Netflix. It's, like, on my list. I really want to watch that.
I would say, like, my girl was really interested in watching it, and I was like, but then it's like, I like gory stuff, and it was gory, so I was like, all right,
I love me some body horror, like,
yeah, dude, and that's what this is all about, like, dude, slicing and dicing. It's like, okay, and then it's, like, really morbid too, so it's like, okay, like, damn. So yeah, man, let's go ahead, let's dive into this Kickstarter. I think we kind of broke down. We built up that climax. We keep growing out a little too much. I gotta pull it back, man. So first off, congratulations though. it looks like you funded 4,560 out of 5,000 with 15 days to go. So has this been like a 30-day campaign?
Yeah, 30-day campaign. So we're halfway through the duration of the campaign.
So
it feels pretty good.
When did you hit that though? I mean, like, did you see a big spike the first? I heard the first and the last week are usually like the big like, tickets.
I mean, I would say the first 3 days and the last 3 days are like where you make are the biggest spikes for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a metric nerd, so when I see when those sort of breakdowns happen, that makes sense. Sorry. When those sort of breakdowns happen, I immediately jump on it like, oh, really? That's a trend. Our first day we got like over $1,000. Our next day we jumped to almost that same amount. And then you start, like, the curve is very up and then over. Like,
very brutal.
Yeah, I mean, and talk to any kind of Kickstarter creator and they'll tell you, like, the middle is just kind of a dead zone. It's not flatlining by any means, but
it can be defeating.
100%.
Yeah.
Oh, it gets in your head.
So 172 backers though, like, did you do any sort of like before you did this campaign, like a pre-launch campaign where people could be like notified when launch type of deal?
Yeah, Kickstarter has that kind of built in, where they have a pre-launch page where you notify on launch, they send an email to everyone that notifies. I think we ended that period with 80, 81, 82 followers, something like that. I think 30% of the total people who follow your campaign, like, throughout, because people can continue to follow you go. So, like, I think 250 some odd. I can look it up right now.
Yeah, actually, dude, it's really cool that you're into the metrics because, like, people that, well, even just like the stuff, you know, like people who listen, like, I can't tell you out of all the interviews I've done, there's been a handful who never did a pre-launch page. They just the day they
just
could,
launched
they
right
launched
into it.
Yep.
You need people to like be aware of it and know what you're doing before you just launch into the world, because again, like, your first 2-3 days are your biggest days. So many people are coming in. That's when you get all your momentum. That's when people.
So what did you do to get people to back? You had 80 backers before you even went live with it. What type of things did you and Dalton do to kind of get this out there?
A lot of being on Twitter and letting people know and sort of like gradually sort of building up to it, you know, releasing like cryptic lines from the book, revealing some line art, revealing some pages. When we first like got the cover and put it up on Twitter and said, hey, this is coming, like, I think that tweet got like 80 or like a ridiculous, it was like,
yeah, hell yeah, dude.
It was like 30 or 40 likes and a bunch of retweets and comments.
What did you see from that in terms of backing though?
I know it's
kind of hard to gauge like afterwards, but did you see anything like immediately from like the day of?
I mean, day of, we may raise like over 20%, like 21% of the entire funding goal, and the majority of that, by the way, was like our early bird sales. It wasn't,
dude.
Even,
that's
like,
so awesome.
Yeah. So cheaper than normal.
Yeah. What did your early bird sale look like?
It was just 20% off of every. Off of every one of the tier lists, or the,
That's really cool too. Because I see a lot of people, they'll do like a PDF and like a physical. They'll do like maybe $1 or $2 off. What made you want to do 20% off all of them?
I wanted people to get the higher rated stuff.
Okay, yeah.
I want to get as much stuff out there as I can, you know. And part of it is like, you know, we're taking 20% off of like a $75 tier, but that's still $60 you bring into the campaign. Like,
yeah.
I am still very much down for that. And the more people that have it, the more people will be excited to get it next time. And it all feeds into itself, I think.
So did you do any sort of like pricing, I guess, with, cause I've heard of this too, where people will take like the total cost of what it would be like for publishing and like the artists and everything. And then they divide it by like a certain number and that's what they sell their PDF by and like their physical by, or did you guys figure it out a different way?
We, I mean, I think when we did our first one, Mechaton, because it was a 28-page book, we made it a little bit more expensive based on some kind of metric, but we basically figured out that I think the way we figured out pricing at first was just looking at successful comic Kickstarters and seeing what they charge, and seeing what like what people felt was reasonable. And it's like, people know that this is a pre-order campaign essentially, and that like it's going to be, you know, our digital tier is $5, and you might not pay $5 off of like a website to get a to get it instantly, but people understand that like you're trying to get the comic like made.
So I think they
take a little bit of ownership in like, you know, I'm helping create something.
Oh, dude, absolutely. So
so they're willing to pay like, you know, a dollar or two more for a digital copy, or like, you know, whereas like our physical copy is $10, which like you probably wouldn't pay that ever in a comic shop, but because you're like, you know, really taking ownership of like, I'm helping make this thing, or I really like this creator, you're willing to pay the extra, you know, $5 over.
No, you're 100% right. I would say, like, you know, in my time interviewing, I've probably backed about 15 projects, I think 15 or 16. And that's just on Kickstarter. I didn't even count the ones on Indiegogo.
Right.
Because I'm a big believer, I need to put my mouth, you know, or my money where my mouth is. Like, I don't need to just interview you guys. And I actually need to support you guys too. Because that, the biggest thing for me is, like, I feel like I'm a part of, like, the success. Like, you know, of those, like, you know, 16, 17 backings, I think 16 of them funded.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, I had like a pretty much a direct, like, you know, that maybe their goal was $2,000 over when I funded, you know, when I backed, but I still did it like before it backed, you know, funded.
Yeah.
And like, I was still a part of that movement. And, you know, I still did my, you know, retweeted and put the word out. And like, it feels that feeling when you get the book. Like, dude, I'll tell you what, man, I was, yeah. I was just like, kind of like, okay, we're going to get a book. But then like when it was in the mail, I'm like, dude, oh shit. Looked at my girlfriend. I'm like, dude, the book's here. Like, holy shit. Like, it's such a, it's like, it makes you feel like a kid in a comic book shop again,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly. What's funny is, earlier today, my, my friend Jesse, like sent, he did a one as well for his comic Robo, and this is what it came in. And so I have Robo number 4 that I'm gonna read tonight.
Is that like an exclusive, like first look for you, or did he send that out?
No,
as a campaign?
No. This is a campaign. That he
okay.
Did. And like, yeah. We met over Discord doing like, because we're both comic writers, and met over Discord. We went to Dragon Con together, hung out, learned a lot about each other.
So Dragon Con seems just to be like the money maker right now. Like, I've heard you mention that like a handful of times. And
Dragon Con is my favorite place on earth.
So is that, would you recommend like people out there listening, like check it out, like if you're in the area?
Yeah, if you're in the South, you know what, just in general, like, you know, if you would travel to go to Comic Con, you would travel to go to New York or San Francisco, go to Atlanta. It's worth it. It is the most fun you will have at a Comic Con. Like,
dude, 100%. Unreal. So it's funny you said that, because one of my buddies, you ever heard of Catch the Craze?
I don't think so. No.
So they're kind of like me, but I would say they're even better. They have like a lot of different episodes. They've been doing it for a lot longer than me. But both of them, so George was the first one that I interviewed. He sent me, I got a shirt and then a graphic novel. I ended up wearing my shirt. I ended up like telling my daughter, I'm like, hey, check out this graphic novel. And she's like, no. And I'm like, okay, you know, she's 9. But then I was wearing the shirt, and she's like, what's on your shirt, Dad? I'm like, oh, it's Wonder Duck. It's that book I tried showing you. She's like, can I see it? I'm like, yeah. And she read through it literally in 20 minutes. And like, I'm like, dude, like, you know, because my kid likes to read, but she was like sucked into it. She was like, you know, it's late at night, she's like, can I take this to bed and finish reading it? I'm like, yes, you know, do it. And like, because I know my dude's gonna be so stoked when I tell him that. How do you feel when you get that reaction from people who've like read your stuff? Like, that has to be like such a crazy feeling.
Yeah, I think so. In 28, so yeah, we started doing like printing our own stuff and doing shows in 2018. At the end of 2018, in like November, and at the November of 2019, it was like, okay, we've been doing this for a year. How do we feel about it? What is our, like, you know, what's our general feeling about it? Do we even want to continue? You know, just, you know, figuring shit out. Just having that necessary conversation of like, is this something we want to put more money in? Is this something?
Yeah, is this viable? Yeah, yeah.
And then as we were having that conversation, we were at a booth at Comic-Con Way, and this, like, I think she was like 16, 17 year old young girl or young woman came up to us and was like, hey, I got one of your comics last year at this show, and I really, really liked it. Can I get the rest of them?
Dude, like, that was the moment where you were like, yeah, I'm in this.
I was like, this is the greatest moment of my life. This is absolutely top tier. What did you guys say to her?
Like, what did you say?
We were like, yes. Here they are. We will sign all of them. Thank you so much.
That's so cool. And like, just no looking back since, huh?
Yeah, no, it's just been absolutely gung-ho ever since then. Yeah, like, it's definitely a really cool feeling whenever, because you know there are people who like who are backing you because they like you, or backing they want to support you but don't really care about the thing. And when those people like read your book and go, hey, this is actually really good, like I was surprised by, like, this is good, and keep backing the future campaigns based off that feels incredible. Like, mm-hmm.
But it's like at first, like, what? Like, what do you mean you were surprised it was good? Like, well, what are you getting at?
You know, like, your mom doesn't give you money because
I know.
she wants to see you succeed. She doesn't know what a comic book is, but then she actually read it and was like, oh, this is really good.
let's go ahead. Let's start reeling it back and going into the Kickstarter. Let's break down what we're here for. So. Let's start looking at the intro. I assume you want to go through like the meat of it, and then we can go through the tiers.
Yeah, sure. Let's do it. However you want to get it done. If you want to see me just talking into a camera, sitting in exactly this position, that's what that video is. Just me talking about the campaign. We don't have to watch it, and we shouldn't watch it. I'm just letting you know.
So I mean, do you want to condense it? I guess, or is it something where the campaign's explained as we go?
It's just sort, yeah. It's just sort of like the verbal, the 1.5 to 2 minute version of me telling you what the campaign is.
I got you.
And,
yeah,
and
we're
why
good,
I'm
we're
excited
good.
About it, and how why I think you'll like it. But yeah, but yeah, we can scroll down. Oh, am I the one host?
Yep. Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. I thought you had window sharing. Sorry.
Well, no. So it's so I'm watching your window. You are sharing your window with me, but you control the window. So that's my bad for not explaining it more in depth.
No, you're good. You're good. You're good. So, this is our logo. It was made by Brenda Snelby. She is fantastic. Like the amount of detail that went into it, like the little blood splatter and everything, mm-hmm. just absolutely gorgeous.
How'd you end up finding her?
a whole network of comic friends that I've gathered, like people that I know through Kickstarter and through Comic Book Yeti. I'm a critic over at a comic book site, so I know.
So I keep hearing about Comic Book Yeti.
Yeah.
So who was it? Someone was talking about it. I'm trying to remember who. But they were talking about it's hard to find people who want to review stuff for free, and I was like, dude, I will do that.
Yeah, that was me.
What? That was you, dude. I'm so fucking mind blown. Yeah, it was during the space. Yeah, because I was like, dude, Comic Book Yeti. I remember that. Like, I'm, by the way, still about it. Like,
absolutely. Yeah, we'd love to have you on. But they're a comic review site. We are a comic review site that tries to. The idea is like we break reviews down into very like quick, like still in depth and still like. Taking the comic for more than just face value, but in very like bullet point digestible sort of broken down, like what is it?
So what comics though? Like all of them?
Mostly indie comics, comics, web comics. I have a monthly Kickstarter column where I talk about Kickstarter comics that are currently running and what like why I think you should go back them.
Okay,
with that actually just released earlier today, so that's cool. But anyway, all that to say, so Grant Stoy is someone that I knew through reviewing one of his comics. He does SideQuest. I talked to him about who did his design, and he brought me to Brenda. That is a lot of how, like, I know everyone in this industry is a lot of just, like, I know a person who knows a person who knows a person. Same thing with Heather Vaughn,
So, you know, sometimes people have responded that they did it through Fiverr. I had someone responded that they got it through like a Craigslist ad. It's always interesting because that's the thing with me. Like, regardless of how big you are or, you know, where you're at, you've probably done something different than someone has. And if anyone takes the time to listen to this, I want to, like, hopefully provide, like, learning tools, you know, like, so yeah, maybe someone's out there wet behind the ears and like, okay, like, you know, how do I start breaking into? So, like, you know, forming a network, you know, what was,
Like,
how did you do that? Like, just like,
I went into comics journalism intentionally. I knew that I wanted to get into comics and I figured no one's gonna like just want to read my comic. So, I mean, like, and that may very well have been the case if I had just come at it that way. But I was like, if people know who I am before I start selling them something, then they're going to be more likely to pay attention to me.
And how have you seen that pay off?
Greatly.
So, I mean,
not that it's all been transactional. Like, these are my friends and I like them a lot. But, like, definitely having that network there and having...
You can't put a price on a network, you know?
And people who are like, this is how you do this, and these are the pitfalls to avoid, and, you know, and people who will double check your work, and it's priceless, absolutely.
How would you say, like, because, I mean, that just seems like a lot of work. Like, go into it in the beginning reviewer. Like,
I had an English journalism background, so, like... This is already what I knew how to do.
Like, so you were just like, it was already like, I guess, like riding a bike and you're like, I'm ready to take the unicycle.
Sure. Like, I already had a strong writing background and I already had a strong analytical background because I had done a lot of literary criticism and film review and stuff like that. So just applying that to comics, I was like, I want to write comics. I need to be able to talk about them in a way that's like beyond, you know,
was
the art
it hard?
Is good and the letter
like breaking
first,
that mold like
yeah for sure like learning a lot of the in-depth stuff about comics was really difficult at first, but it taught me so much and it made me a better comic writer for sure.
What about a better reviewer after becoming a writer? You know what I mean, like, now that you're in the mindset of writing a comic, like,
sure.
Does it affect your reviewing, like when you review a new one?
Like, hard to say, because I've been a writer as long as I've been a reviewer, and they kind of go hand in hand.
Okay, yeah, well, that was probably a dumb question.
no, it's just like I do think about really behind the scenes stuff sometimes. Like, I'll look at a page and I'll be like, oh, they definitely did the lettering after the coloring on this, and I can tell because of these reasons. Or like,
what are some of the reasons? Just quick example, I guess.
I mean, like, the way that... I guess a really good, like, a way to point at it would be actually, like, the letterer and the artist might not have been in communication because the first person that speaks is on the right and not the left side of the page.
I never would have guessed.
Like, and so it, like, the balloons fit awkwardly. And like, that's something that you would intuit as a reader. Like, this reads a little bit weird. I don't know why, but as someone who reviews comics and writes comics, you can just see it. You're like, they didn't talk to each other at all during this process.
Yeah, like, for me, like, because I deal with audio. So, like, for me, I really pride on myself, like, make sure, like, my audio is in sync with my lips, like, when everything's talking. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm listening, you know, because I'll listen to podcasts, I like listening to a lot of like movie breakdowns and like film critic like reviews and like where they like condense it for you. You could tell when they do like the voiceover stuff, you know, like you could tell when someone's like talking and like now that I've like learned what that is, like when I'm watching a movie, I can tell when they're doing it in the movie and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I had a podcast where I did an interview and my son he like woke up and like came to get my attention and I muted myself in OBS but I didn't mute myself in our talk, like in StreamYard, so
yeah,
the recording was muted and I had to voice over my questions and I was able to actually, because I knew about it so well, I was able to line it up in a way where people just thought it was out of sync without realizing I like just like had to like really like listen to answers and formulate questions like for 5 days straight to figure it out. I mean, dude, that stuff is like, I never would have guessed, like, you want to put the first person in the left, like what others think, like, that just seems like insane. There has to be so much that goes into it.
Oh, yeah, no, there's so much technique that kind of goes on behind the scenes that you know that you aren't always cognizant of. But yeah, that's sort of what you learn being a reviewer, what you learn being a writer, and having them like coagulate together. I wouldn't say it's like heavily changed the way I write, but it definitely informs like how I create a script and how
so
I,
when
like, the
when you
rev- that I use.
When you like review, do you like bring that up though? Like, are you like, you know, it read weird because they had the, you know, obvious the writer.
Well, you don't. Know. I mean, in that regard, I wouldn't like call someone out for it, but I would say like, you know, the lettering feels a little awkward and out of sync with the art in these ways.
So you basically just like put in like a really nice manner.
Yeah. I'm not trying to like make people feel bad. I'm just like, I'll just point out like, hey, this didn't work necessarily, but
I haven't per se like really done, like I've done game reviews before, and it's like basically off like the way I did it, like off a score, you know, and if it's a bad game, like it has, you know, I have to be able to tell it it's a bad game, I guess. I'd never really try to review any, but I wouldn't want to do that either, because like a lot of these people I'm talking to, like I'm friends with, like, you know, we talk, like, you know, after this I hope to like talk to you about, you know, issue number two and like everything, right? Like, you know, so I don't want to like shit on your comic, and you know, I get it,
so
I get it.
You do have to like go into it with a trust that, first of all, with a like being tasteful, not being like they're a shit writer and a shit artist and they never should have gotten into this comic, like no, that's not how you do it either.
So,
way. But also, you have to go in with the faith that whatever criticism you throw out there, they will take constructively. They're not going to take it. They're not going to take it personally.
What do you do if it's like a total flop? Like,
have you gotten one?
Generally,
we don't review it. Generally, okay. We just don't. We just say it's not up to our standards. I'm sorry. Like, but we're
that alone.
If you want us to like put it out and shit on your comic, then we will. But it's a matter of like, we don't make any money off of this. We do this for free. So I would.
Yeah. So why waste your time with it?
Yeah. Why waste our time like slogging through this comic that we don't want to read? And
have
also,
you ever got
like,
backlash from that? Like someone like being upset?
Yeah. People get upset all the time.
It's just a part of the
really
job, though, I guess, you know.
Comic review, which makes a lot of sense. But yeah.
Do you ever tell them why, though? Or are you just like, this isn't up to our standards?
I mean. I'm not the person who deals with that most of the time, luckily.
I got you. That burden's on another shoulder.
Yeah. But I do know the person that does, and they can they're like polite once, polite twice, and if you push them a third time, they're like, let me break down everything that this sucks about this in the worst, most brutal way possible so that you never bother me with this again.
Yeah. Because I mean, I'm just trying to think of myself, like if I had something get turned down, I would maybe want to hear like why. But I don't know. I've never been put in that situation, but I'm getting off tangent again. Let's go ahead and like start diving deeper into your campaign, though.
Into the campaign.
Yes.
So actually it is sort of relevant. I will bring it back to the campaign because the way I break down my the campaign page is the same way that I break down a review.
Okay.
That I would put on the website. So what is Frankenstein the Unconquered? And I tell you, like, Frankenstein the Unconquered is a story about violence as a mode of survival, toxic masculinity, damages individuals and the environment around them. It's a love letter, pulpy adventure comics like Conan the Barbarian and Mad Max and the literature that inspired them and Universal Horror Monsters. It's like, this is the genre. This is what it is and what you can expect.
So
this
did that just kind of happen like out of habit, or did you plan to do it this way?
It just made the most sense to me. I was like, if I wanted to, like, if I was a backer, this is like what I want to know about a comic, in the same way that if I was a like comic reader and wanted to know about a comic in a review, this is what I would want to know about the comic. So it all sort of tied together in that way, which was very convenient and nice for me. Speaking of, I forgot to mention, cause we got off on that tangent, but this, logo, we put on a sticker.
Ooh.
That you can get with your order if you have a physical. So if you do anything other than just the digital copy, you can add that to your order. Anyway.
So how much to get the physical signed?
It is there. $25.
You know, I'm gonna have to manage my pledge. I definitely
sure.
Dude, one thing for me, like I said, I really take pride in being a part of these. But man, having like your signature on the book, like it's just like, man, I look at this like DC level, because the thing is, like, you guys put that production value into it. Like the only difference at this point is the logo, right?
Yeah.
You could put a DC logo in the corner and it would be as good as the books on the shelf.
Sure. And like for, you know, for certain publishers, like not to call anyone out, not that this is a bad practice or anything, but like for Image and Scout and SourcePoint and Press and things like that, sometimes that is literally the difference, is like they found a book on Kickstarter that did really well and was really popular, and they were like, hey, how would you like to bring it over to our publisher and we'll like put it in every comic shop in America. So yeah, no, that this tells you like how much it's been destigmatized, like the crowdfunding model of this, mm-hmm. that like really big publishers are taking advantage of it and finding their IP there. But yeah, this is our cover for the book. It's made by Heather Vaughn, who's just an absolutely badass artist. It's very, oh my God, my cred is absolutely disappearing right now. It's based on the guy who did the, I'm sorry. It's based on the artist who did the like original Conan books. And we're just going to have to leave it at that because I completely am blanking on the name. I'm sorry.
You know, my thing is I do such a good job of like pulling you here, pulling you there. I put the blame on me. I put a man through the ringer with all these questions and tangents. And I mean, the style is unbelievable. I love just like the silhouette holding the blade and just kind of like you could tell he's going through something. You could see it, you know?
Yeah. You can, I mean, and this is like him arising from the crater of the comet that lands on, or that lands back on Earth. So it's like right at the beginning. Oh God, Franzetti. I think it's Franzetti is the name of it. Anyway, that's beside the point. I'm just going to beat myself about it forever. But yeah, then we go into what's it about. And we talk about everything that we talked about earlier. 500 years in the future, exiled to the stars. He goes on a quest for revenge, and then some of the pages and what they look like. So we see like how it's lettered, how it's colored, how, like Mary Landrieu's art on it. This is going to change, but yeah, some of the lettering specifically.
The first, like the way you have his body and it's kind of bleeding into the panel on, you know, his head, and just the way like that introductory, like I said, this is like when I would open up a DC comic and like they were introducing a new character, you know what I mean? Like this is the same level.
Yeah, we
like
wanted him to be super imposing and just like the most, you know, present and in your face as we could.
So with the blade though, is there any meaning behind it? Is it like any sort of like magical properties or any sort of like significance?
He literally tosses it aside in the next page. It's just the sword that he had, and it's worn out its purpose.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember talking a long time ago when the original story came out in Descent into Dread, the anthology. We were on a podcast and we started talking about like nudity is normally associated with like vulnerability, but the way we use it with Frank like projects a lot of strength,
like the Terminator being, almost.
Yeah, like him being naked is like the fact he's so confident about it basically turns him kind of, like you said, into a kind of a Terminator kind of figure. But yeah, so basically in these panels he's just happens upon this like group of marauders. They are this group of soldiers that are kind of shaking down these travelers for their food and taxes, and he goes in and he's literally just hungry. He just grabs a piece of bread, and they, you know, start pointing a gun at him, and so he takes one of their heads off.
Yeah,
and at that point, it's go time.
I mean, when you were talking to your artist, like, what sort of direction did you give them for this type of scene and this type of buildup? You know, was it hard getting the finished product, or were they pretty good at what they were doing to begin with?
I mean, Mary is absolutely stellar at what she does. She's her art style is so heavy and like intense and crosshatched that it was just a natural fit for it. But yeah, no, the like in terms of, you know, how everyone is put together, that's all us, is or that's all me like describing each panel and what goes in on it.
So you have an idea of like each panel, like before you even.
Okay. Yeah. There are different ways of putting together a comic script, but the way I do it is very systematic and very.
Do you think
like,
that comes from your experience, like with like writing scripts and writing in general?
Yeah. No, undoubtedly. I think of it like a film. Like my first couple of comic scripts read exactly like a film script, and then I learned to break it down more specifically into a comic book format.
So, do you think? How do you think that sets you apart from like other like script writers? Like, do you think that gives you kind of like a notch above the rest?
I mean, I don't want to brag on myself or anything, but I do think I...
Toot that horn, man. Toot
I
it.
Sort of, I do have a lot of, like, prior experience with, like, you know, positioning bodies and, like, making sure that everything is going to, like, you know, work in the frame. So I do think I'm sort of more easily able to communicate with an artist what it is that I'm looking for. And then
you're right though. I mean, looking at this like the way it is like a movie. You know, if you took stills from a movie and put it on a page, like
sure, which comics you know does that and can do more than that and can you know use things differently. But for this kind of vibe, especially you know, like I said, our inspirations were like Universal horror movies and Conan the Barbarian and Mad Max. So. That sort of like gritty cinematic style is what we were going for. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think it works really well. My one complaint, like if I could go back and fix something, is that I want his face to come like more off than this. But
yeah,
but so we wanted it to just be like brutal and gross. And
was there like, more like a lot of changes and variations from the first appearance to the way she like ended up designing him?
Yes, sort of. Yeah. So every artist kind of brings their own sort of inspirations and what they think of what this character would look like. But I mean, it always is, you know, scarred. It always is sort of this dead thing, big hulking, like every like I've seen three iterations of this guy from Dalton, from Andrea, and now from Mary. And they're all the same and they're all radically different.
Okay.
Which is really cool to see.
Do you think we'll ever see something in the future? Like, because I, and hopefully, like, when we get ready to wrap this up, we can touch base on it a little bit more, like the multiverse idea. Do you think we might be able to see all three of those designs meet?
Probably not.
Yeah. I stretched it too far. Sorry, just fresh off Spider-Man, No Way Home.
No. I don't think we're going to get, like, a multidimensional kind of thing going on, but it's a fun idea. Who knows? Maybe in a short, maybe in a spinoff. But yeah, and then just a quick, like, slick sort of. We got a guy, Brant Fowler, to do this for us. Where it just
this looks
goes
awesome,
through.
By the way.
Yeah, I don't know if it like translates to people actually getting stuff, but it looks good enough to me that it's worth the investment for sure. And then we have, just all the different sort of reward tiers that we have. So we have a variant cover that's made by Fel Hound, who is an insanely popular indie comic artist. The signed version, the signed variant. We actually have, we're working with a guy that we know, Jacob Fleming, who has... also written comics and also designs RPGs, like tabletop RPGs.
Yeah.
So we're working with him to create a RPG one shot that you can like play with your friends. It's based on the world of Frank.
That has to feel unreal.
Characters in it. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We're not quite done with it yet, but we're getting there, and it's so much fun to look like. Just to nerd out about. Mm-hmm. And this was one of those things. I always try and bring something unique to every like campaign and property. So just something cool that's like that sets it apart. And I think that this does a good job of that. And like, you know, I hope, you know, inspires people to pay the little bit extra for for this kind
I think
of cool,
I think it's awesome, dude. Stuff. Like a whole game based off of like your dream and your passion.
Yeah. And then we do this every campaign. We have an iridescent foil cover, which looks really, really cool. And I don't get to show it off very often. Like, it's hard to, because I have to print it before I can give it away. but I have the one from Mechaton.
Oh, that does look awesome.
And it's both sides, which is kind of cool too.
So that's the one you take home, huh? When you get your copy, you're like, this is the one I'm putting up on the wall.
Yeah. No, totally. People love the hell out of these. I love the way they turned out. It looks super cool. Plus, mm-hmm. you get two copies actually with the iridescent foil cover. You get this one, and then you get a signed copy of like the plain one. Because okay. This one display, and then this one you read.
So you end up paying $50 for it at that point, because the signed one's $25. So that's like that's a deal in itself. Like getting a whole comic signed. Yeah, you're getting like a whole another tier.
Yeah. We try and put as much value into it as possible. Dude. Like we're asking RPG for a lot of these other tiers, but yeah, and you get everything below it.
Yeah, like, yeah, dude. So perfect, man.
Yeah. And then the everything tier, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the variant cover, the regular cover, the iridescent foil cover. You get the digital everything assigned. You get Mechaton number 1 and 2. You also get some of the other books that I've been involved with, Descent into Dread and Bivisibility. Bivisibility, I have a story in. It's a Cat Calamia comic anthology. And I have a story called Gay Panic that I think is really fun.
So, what was, I guess, your bit in that? What was the story about? How many pages did you end up having involved?
It's a 4-page story. It's not very long, but it's a lot of fun. It's about, the idea of it is, it's one of those, like, old school, like, not after school special, but, you know, like, the, like, 1940s, 1950s, like, cheesy narrator, like, mm-hmm, let's talk about your body and you, like, school, like, educational type films.
A good voice actor, man.
I try. But it's that, but for approaching your partner's like bisexual feelings.
So how did that feel? I mean, because that's a whole different world.
Way different. Used
to. And I'm sure that's something that, like, you know, obviously you wanted to write it. So I'm sure that's something that you wanted to have written. Like, did it feel good being able to express that, you know, that side that, you know, that's totally different from what you're used to?
Sure. I mean, like, anthologies are a great way in general to sort of break into comics, because a lot of them will look for like artists for you. You don't have to pay for the art. Some even pay you, which is great. And this one, sort of fell into my lap, and they were looking for writers, and I thought, okay, my wife is bi, and we have, like, I've had a lot of conversations with her about, like, how she feels being in a straight presenting relationship, but still having, like, those feelings for women. And I just kind of put that through a filter of, like, comedy, and sort of, like, you know, not turned it into a joke, but just like sort of drama, like hype, so hyperbolic that it became ridiculous.
So how did she feel? Sort of,
she loves it.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool.
I told her, like, I was like, I'm thinking about doing this story. How do you feel? She's like, do it. Yes, I want to see. I want to see it, and I want it to be way gayer than you're going to make it.
So how did you feel, though, as well? I mean, being able to do this, like, as sort of, I mean, it almost seems like a tribute to your wife, you know?
Oh no, I really liked the story. I really liked, you know, the chance to sort of do something different. I don't write a lot of straight comedy. A lot of what I write is like, you know, horror and action, mm-hmm. and like supernatural magical realism stuff. So it was a very different sort of vibe than I'm used to, and it was a lot of fun. I have some other stories coming in through some other anthologies, but they won't be publishing for a little while. So right now, this is what I have available.
I got you.
Yeah, this is what I have available, like, as a side thing that you can grab.
So, like, were you provided, like, copies of this? Is this, like, the digital part or the physical that you're giving away?
Oh, it's the physical book.
So, I mean, did they give you, like, a handful of copies to give away?
They gave me a handful of copies that I could sell and give away, and then I just, like, I buy them wholesale. Like,
okay,
I buy them at cost so that I can sell them and turn a profit for myself, which is nice.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, very nice that they do that. Like, but yeah. And then finally, to cap it all off, we have a commission tier. So you get everything in the, like, the foil cover tier, everything that comes with that, plus you get a character commission from Mary Landrieu that you can put like
which is odd. That looks awesome.
Yeah, her art
is that cool. A character in the story?
It is not. No, it's a character from I think The Punisher.
Okay, the skull. I was about to ask, but I was like, this does look pretty post-apocalyptic almost. So maybe.
No, if you want to take a trip, go to Instagram and look up Mary Landrieu and just look through her like black and white drawings. They are so incredible, just hyper detailed, and it's definitely the kind of thing that like if you're into getting commissions and stuff. If you want like original art from like really cool indie artists, she's definitely one you want to grab.
Yeah, no, I definitely like what I see right now is just gorgeous. The detail, the way that the gun's designed and,
No,
and the body proportions like, too, you know?
Yeah, she's incredibly talented. And I mean, that's a big reason we put her on this book. We really liked what we saw. We worked with her actually at first in Descent into Dread. She has, I can show you, she has a story toward the end that is, you know, very different, but you can see sort of a like that style in there. And we were like, this might be a good fit for like Frank when we turn it into a series. And lo and behold, she's really into it too. She loves drawing Frank. It's like one of her favorite. She like every time I'm in like email with her, she's like, "Can I start drawing pages now? Can I please start drawing pages now?"
And that has to be awesome, you know, as a writer to have an artist that's so eager to do it too.
Oh yeah. No, it's very validating and it's, you know, it's infectious. I love having that kind of enthusiasm on the team. Anyway, closer look at the variant cover, which is a very different style, but still pretty metal and cool. A little bit more information about the one shot, the RPG one shot, which I talked about, sort of breaking down some of the add-ons. So we do a, we have an add-on that's $5. That's your name on the thank you page, which is our second page. I can show you what that looks like. So for Mechaton, it's the first page that you turn in is a big thank you with all the names on it. And then the creator bio is down below. Stickers, we do a PDF of the script that has like notes, like a running commentary from me and Dalton, which is a ton of fun to do. That just shows like, you know, here was the original like, you know, idea behind this, and here's how this changed,
like behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, it's like a director's commentary kind of. Yeah. We have a print by Flux. We actually haven't, I think we're getting this in tomorrow finally. Flops unfortunately fell behind. That is their moniker is Flops.
So what Flops. Is Flops?
Flops is an artist.
We talked about the term previously. A floppy?
Oh, like a floppy, said, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so when you said that's what I thought. What is a floppy? Is that literally a floppy disk?
No, a floppy is like a monthly issue of a comic.
Okay.
Because you know, it's like literally a floppy comic.
Yeah, I see. Thank you. Because I literally had someone offer me a floppy and I'm like looking at my computer. I'm like, I don't have a fucking floppy disk. Like, I don't know. I don't know where to put this. Like, so when you mentioned that, it like triggered my mind. I was like, here's a good opportunity for me to learn what this is. Cause that's something I've never knew. So yeah, that's cool.
All right. Let me show you real quick. I'm going to share another. Oh, sorry.
Oh, you're fine. You're fine.
I'm just going to share another screen with you. Chrome tab. There you go.
I need to.
Just to pull up, because I don't have. Unfortunately, I can't show you the actual print that we have available.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is his style. This is very like
awesome
old school sort of like. And this was the one in particular that we saw that we were like, yeah, we need this guy on our project. Is like, he's super into like the Universal Horror Monsters. He's super into.
So what's he doing for you guys then?
He's making a print for us. So like let me grab off my wallet.
Like a picture.
like a picture. Sorry, thing went out. Yeah, like one of these.
Okay,
guys.
Yeah. That's awesome.
This is from Beck Kubrick for our other project, Mechaton. But this is one that she did for us. It's gonna be smaller than that one. It's gonna fit in the packaging for the comic. But
that's gonna be so cool.
Yeah, it's something you can put in a frame, put on your wall. It's gonna look badass. I've seen it. It's very like pinup style. It's very
dude, hell yeah, man.
Cool and sexy and you know.
So
it's got the bride in it.
Was there any more of your Kickstarter tiers that you wanted to break down, or any more of the campaign itself that you wanted to look at?
Let's see. Is there anything you got it pulled up? So
yep, I just pulled it up.
Yeah. So who would love Frankenstein? People who like. Look at that, Bloodborne. Bassist,
yeah, I know,
Bloodborne,
I know.
Something is killing the children. Conan the Barbarian, barbaric. You know. Look at that, Fight Club.
Yeah, dude.
Like,
I mean,
just put in a whole list of things like, you know, Hack Slash, Cabin in the Woods, Fangs. We went through kind of. I encourage you, if you're interested, go through and kind of learn about all the artists and the letters. And
hey, if you want to take time, feel free. If you want to break it down, you can. Or we I will also have this link provided in the description as well.
Dalton's my co-writer. That's me. That's Mary. She's great. Canadian artist. Dahlia Maha's the colorist. She's Brazilian. Really, really cool person, and just has a really interesting kind of
I love the coloring in this. Yeah. It looks so good.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Nathan Kempf is the letterer. He's a French guy. He lettered Mechaton for us. Really cool dude. He's done a bunch of stuff for Marvel, DC, Image. I think he was just awarded like best letterer by the what is it, like Independent Comics Association, something like that.
Was it hard getting someone from like DC and Marvel to come work on the team? Like that's pretty impressive, right?
Not if they're a letterer. It's not that hard.
Damn.
Letterers work quickly and efficiently and for relatively cheap.
Okay.
So those you can actually get like professional quality very, very easily. Not that everyone else is also is very professional. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's easier to have access to one than the other.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to get like, I'm not going to get Romero Jr. on my John Romero Jr. on my thing.
Yeah. No, I got you. I got you.
Like on my comic, it's just not going to happen.
It's a dream though, right?
Yep. Heather Vaughn, did the cover. She is fantastic. Like all her stuff is just absolutely beautiful and gorgeous. And then, Brenda Snellby did the design, so all the stuff that's on the cover, the logo and the names and stuff, and she's super talented as well. And then I just did a quick breakdown of like where all the money goes. The vast majority goes to the art. The rest is like shipping, printing, taxes. And then a breakdown of our schedule, like when we're hoping to get it to you. So, I mean. Hopefully it works out like that. Sometimes hiccups happen, but we're always in communication if anything were to happen. If you're international, I just explained here, like if you're international,
the
shipping rates are a lot, so we bump up your pledge. So if you get like a regular one, we'll go ahead and sign it for you. And just like bump it up down the line.
But
so
at that, you know, at that point too, digital is always a way, you know, they can
still
support
digital,
you.
Like, yeah, they can always do digital, but if you're going to pay for like, mm-hmm. you know, if you're paying for a $10 book and
that's cool that you guys are going above beyond
and you're paying $25 in shipping, I want to make it worth your while. You know, mm-hmm. that doesn't feel very good, but, and then this is just stuff about shipping and like what we do to protect your stuff and some ideas we have for stretch goals. So we want to add a prose. If we have 200 backers, which we're well on our way to getting, we're like 30 shy of that. We're going to add a prose short story to the end of the comic. That's like an old school comic kind of thing where you have back matter and and like prose, you know, stories, especially in like Conan, always had like prose stories in the back. Like a little short story. So we want to add that in if we get a certain number of backers. And then if we reach a certain amount above that, we're going to give the creative team a bonus because we want to pass that along to them as much as possible. Yeah.
Well, so let me ask you this. We have 15 days complete. You have what, 400, I think it's like $85 left to fund?
$440 left.
$40. So I was a little off. What happens if you don't hit that? I mean, you're like right there, but what if the off chance that doesn't happen? Is there a plan B where people like can, like, I guess, like group buy this or try to fund this another matter? Or is there something that you have to do other, you know, otherwise?
I mean, in the extremely off chance at this point that it doesn't fund, what we would probably do is bring it back and in some way modified, try and bring the cost down a little bit, try and do what we can to, like, you know, make sure that we would do like some kind of post-mortem. We would see what went wrong and you know, if there's anything we can do, if we need to just add something of value onto it, or if we need to cut costs in some way. One of the things that we talked about early was, what if Frank was a black and white book? What if it didn't have any colors? And I think that the art is strong enough to like stand.
Yeah,
up to that.
Yeah. I think it looks gorgeous with the coloring. But I could see the potential with black and white too.
But yeah, I think both work really well. I think like I could go either way with it. I think more people generally like the color, mm-hmm. so we decided to keep that and go forward with that in general. But there have been plenty of successful comics that have been in black and white. Lady Mayhem, a couple of. A month or two ago, Carl Slominski did a Kickstarter called Lady Mayhem, 64-page graphic novel that was basically like just 90s Punisher, you know.
That's awesome.
Guns,
yeah.
and it was just brutal, but it was all this gorgeous like black and white line art. So there's definitely like a case, you know, to be made for that.
You know, and I have no doubt that you're gonna, like I said, you're
it's,
so close.
It's
but I think it's important to ask, you know, because like,
yeah,
the thing is,
no,
like,
no.
You know, because you might fund it, but there might be someone who's watching who doesn't fund.
Sure.
And then they can be like, okay, well, I didn't think about cutting the color from this. Like, let's try it, you know?
Yeah. And you can always like, you know, put color on as like a stretch goal or something like that.
Yeah.
So that would be a possibility, but we found a formula that works for us pretty well, at least right now. And I'm not saying like I'm not cocky. I'm not like, yeah, we had it in the bag from the beginning. In fact, I was actually pretty nervous about this one because this is our we have Mechaton going, and people funded Mechaton number two partially off of like, yeah, we funded Mechaton number one. We want to see where this goes. But I'm
yeah,
like, oh,
and you
shit,
didn't have that with this, really.
But oh, people are yeah, are people gonna like? People are gonna want to back a new number one, and it seems like
something totally different too, right?
Yeah, completely different. This is very, like, Mechaton is very all ages and fun and, like, sort of comedy bent to it. Has, you know, a lot of wacky shenanigans, very, like, Scott Pilgrim-y.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, like, very not that. This
gonna
is,
kill you.
Yeah, this is very doom and, like, I mean, it's got, like, that sort of awesome action vibe to it, but much more, like, horror and sort of intensity and, you know, more mature themes for sure.
So,
getting the audience wasn't guaranteed from one to the other, but we had a good idea of, at the very least, the work that we needed to put mm-hmm. in to reach like a $5,000 Kickstarter goal.
So since we're already here, what would you like to say that to anyone that's watching? Because I'm going to try to get, you know, this will be edited and out before your campaign's
sure.
over. But and you could always share the link to the video tonight. And there's not much, you know, we had the little, like, where I had to transition to the Kickstarter, but that's it.
Yeah.
So like 99% of it is like what it would be anyways. It would just, that part would be cut out. But what would you say to anyone who's watching, who's like backing the kit or following the Kickstarter, but not backing it? Like, what would you say to push them over, you know, to kind of convince them like to get the book now, you know?
Please. Please. No, please. I'd say that, this is a really cool idea that we've had for a long time, and I was really hesitant about bringing it to like the full 20 page serial format, because I imagine if people are looking at it and going, the art is good, I don't think that's up for debate. The art looks incredible. Like I just don't, like, you know, Frankenstein, it seems kind of derivative, whatever. Like, is there a story here? Would be my what I imagine people's concerns would be. To that, I would say I was really hesitant to bring it to the 20-page format because I didn't think that we would have enough story. And then the more we talked about it, the more we realized, oh, there's so much here.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. There's so much we can explore with these characters. So we have 13 issues drafted out where we actually at this point.
What a good number, too. Oh, my God. Yeah. It's almost too perfect.
At this point, they really are like they aren't all solidified and perfect yet, but we do have like 13 scripts drafted out. We know where we're going with it. It is, if you like action, it has a lot of it. If you like, you know, tongue-in-cheek references, they're all over the place. If you like a book that's like that has the confidence to be badass, but also is self-aware enough not to take itself too seriously, I think Frankenstein the Unconquered like hits. What I try to hope for is that it hits that tone perfectly. Is like, on the one hand, yeah, it's silly and stupid, but on the other hand, did you see him punch that dog through the mouth? Like back the skull, fist going through the mouth. That's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, dude. I'm loving this so much. Yeah. Like, I'm getting so hyped for it. And didn't you say there was a certain part where Frankenstein like was picking out body parts that he felt was perfect to fit this guy?
Oh yeah, so that's like original novel stuff. So the idea of
Did any of that translate into your character like creation though? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Like that was our big because so much of like Frankenstein, you know, adaptation has been sort of taking liberties with that. And the most iconic Frankenstein is Boris Karloff. Is, you know, like I said before, big forehead, scar, bolts in the neck, green skin, which is like not what the novel was at all. The novel was Victor Frankenstein the scientist was putting together a creature, or like a man made from all the most beautiful body parts that he could find, because he was obsessed with beauty, and he wanted to make this thing look beautiful. And it's not that he's like, the reason he's ugly isn't because, like, you know, all the parts are hideous. It's that they're all beautiful and they don't work together.
Do you think maybe that obsession with beauty was an underlining, like, obsession with just murder? Justifying murdering people because you felt, you know, they had something, you had something to gain? I've never read the actual novel, so I mean...
It's a surprisingly good read, I'll say. It's a surprisingly, like... clean, not it doesn't it's not as stuffy as you imagine it is pretty entertaining. Hey Noodle. But I have five.
Whoa, we're gonna skirt, I got two.
I gotta skirt right past that. He doesn't murder people. Like, the Dr. Frankenstein doesn't murder people in the original. He digs up graves. Like,
okay,
it's still not good stuff, but
a little but different than like you know, binoculars. Like, okay, that one.
Yeah.
That's a thick ass. Let me get that ass.
He's not just murking people for his project, but he is. I mean, he's defiling grave sites, and he's pulling people from the morgue, and he's getting them in. He's getting these body parts in whatever way he can. Mm-hmm. And when he brings this thing to life, he's so horrified by the sight of it that he abandons it. Like, it's essentially a newborn child that he just abandons. He just wants nothing to do with it. And that's sort of part of the reason why the monster goes off and becomes a monster. But the monster is also like incredibly intelligent. In the novel, he speaks French. He compares himself to Adam from Paradise Lost. He approaches Victor with reason, having murdered a couple people, but still with reason. I will leave you alone if you just create for me a bride. Someone that I can be with, and I won't bother you anymore. And Victor agrees at first, and then becomes horrified by the realization that they might have children, and decides, no, I'm not going to. So he carries, like, the monster carries all of this baggage with him.
Is that the storyline for the Moonsters too? I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, they probably took it from Frankenstein. It's a good book. It's a dude, really good
book. Dude, they had like a whole Frankenstein family, didn't they?
Yeah.
Man, that, oh my God, what a flashback. But hey, we need to wrap it up. And we actually had a great question in the audience. They were asking for any advice for a 15-year-old comic creator. I'm going to do one better, though, because this is one that I typically ask every podcast, because eventually what I want to do is like a buildup of like just everyone's responses and kind of just have like, you know, 50 people answering that one question in their own way. So for anyone that's out there who is creating a book, maybe like struggling with it or kind of just having trouble getting their idea to kind of just go, what advice would you like to give anyone that's listening? Maybe something that helps you push through when you felt like you couldn't or you were struggling, you know, what advice would you like to tell them to help them, you know, achieve their dream?
It feels cliche to say put your head down and do it, but like you really at some, like I would say like don't worry about getting it wrong, just like do it. get it done before you worry about getting it wrong. And if you get it wrong when you get it done, great, move on and do it right next time. Yeah. Or do it a little bit better next time. In the show Adventure Time, there's a great line where Jake the dog says, "Sucking at something is the first step toward being kind of good at something."
Yeah, dude.
So just like, yeah, fail. Like, it's fine. I alluded earlier, like, we were at, you know, a really, really big convention selling $2 books, and we had no business being there, but like, if we hadn't have been there, we wouldn't, like, yes, we wouldn't have met
made
that,
the connection, yeah,
that editor, and it wouldn't, like, it, we would be in a totally different place right now. So sometimes you just have to like kind of recklessly go forward, like learn from your mistakes, but don't let like fear of failure be a reason that you stop.
That's beautiful.
And for that matter, and then the second part of that is, like, always go into things like, you know, I go into everything like, yeah, I'm gonna make comics because I don't know what I'll do otherwise. At the same time, like, don't go into it like, I am completely infallible and I will make this happen, you know, even if my comic is garbage. Like, yeah, if it's, I think, be reasonable with it. I think the most important trait that any writer or creative person has is the ability to hear criticism and know what to do with it.
And it's hard. It's hard to hear that thing. It is, you know, it's hard to do.
But I've been in so many like writing workshops where you're telling someone that like something is broken with their work, and they're like, they just sit there and you can tell that they're not hearing it. That
they don't
want to
hear it. In
their mind, they're like, well, they just don't understand. And it's like, no, we're telling you that it's broken. We're asking you to fix it. So don't be too proud to like fix a mistake. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to like keep on splintering.
No, go ahead.
The caveats,
go ahead.
But like,
go ahead.
But like when someone tells you something is wrong, believe
them. He thanks you for the advice as well.
Thank you. If someone tells you something is wrong, believe them. If someone tells you how to fix it, that's probably where you need to, unless they like are really, really in the know. Like I don't know if you're a writer or an artist, but like if you're an artist and you're drawing something a certain way and like another artist that's really good tells you, oh, this is actually how you do this, this is how you fix what you're doing, that's
listen
great
to
advice
them.
To take. Yeah. But if someone like that is just an observer says, hey, this looks kind of weird, I don't like it, it's not very good, here's how you should fix it, here's what you need to do, stop them, or at least mentally stop them when they say this isn't working, and don't take the advice on how to fix it, because only you are going to be able to know how to like learn how to fix it yourself. There are tools out there, you can always find something, but you don't need to. This is particularly important with writing because everyone thinks they know how to tell a story, and most of them are wrong.
Since I can keep you here by letting you talk a little longer, let's finish it up. Give me the multiverse idea in like, I guess, like a sentence or two, like where the future of because I remember you talking about it in Spaces. If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine.
Sure.
But
so like, what is the world
that,
of of Frankenstein the Unconquered. The world of Frankenstein the Unconquered is I think of it weirdly kind of like SpongeBob, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. So if you watched a lot of SpongeBob, like, there's not a big map of like Bikini Bottom.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a set in stone, you know, this is where everything is. But when you're there for long enough, things make sense to be there, right? Like, when they bring up a new location, you don't know where it is on the map, but you get the feeling that, yeah, it makes sense for this to be here. The architecture fits in, things like that.
Yeah.
That's basically the world of Frankenstein the Unconquered. We're not sitting here saying, you know, these are the hard rules, these are the four nations, everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. We know, like, generally who the big players are, and we know what the world looks like, but we're not trying to create, like, we want to create something tactile. We don't want to make it, like, you know, we're not making a map, so to speak. We're not creating a J.R.R. Tolkien fantasy land. We want it to be fluid. We want it to be
It reminds me, you ever play Legend of Mana?
That does.
It's like a turn-based RPG.
Yeah, it's a really, really old game.
Old one on PlayStation 1. Yeah. Where you could basically, so you have these settings and you would make the map yourself. You'd place what you wanted on the map. So the map was already there. You already had these pieces of, you know, Bikini Bottom, like where Sandy lived, SpongeBob lives, where all they live. And you could just put it where you wanted to, and it just made sense, you know?
Sure. Yeah. And it sort of grows out organically. Mm-hmm. So we know, you know, on a beach somewhere, the Statue of Liberty stands and the Phantom lives inside the crown, but we don't know where that is in relation to everything else. Like, we want things to feel organic and like they make sense, but not so nailed down that it sort of takes away from its otherworldliness. And
do you guys have an idea,
cool factor for that matter?
Do you have an idea of who you want to introduce first?
Oh, issue two is the Wolfman.
Okay.
It's the Beast and the Wolf.
Dude, let's go, man. That's so awesome. Hey, Nordic Uni joining us right at... We're just wrapping up,
right,
man. I'm really sorry. But I will... This video is going to be live. It won't be saved on Twitch, but it is archived on Facebook. It will be archived on YouTube until I get it in post-production, at which point then I usually delete the live video and just have the post-production.
Yeah, man.
Excuse me, but I am really excited, like, with Twitch. I don't ever plan on getting affiliated with it, because once you do, they own your content for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So I like going on affiliated with it, so that way I can have more platforms. You know, like, tonight, we've reached double the amount of people you would have because I was on more platforms. Again, dude, Wells, I really appreciate it. Me and Wells met randomly in the Twitter spaces about indie comics. And then he's like, hey, man. I'm like, yo. And we're like, boom, let's do this. And I'm glad we did because, man, this book looks phenomenal. Once again, big shout out to Wells Thompson for coming on and breaking down Frankenstein the Unconquered with us. You are going to kill this kick. I believe it because you're right there and you have 15 days to go. We'll have the Kickstarter link in the description for anyone that's interested in backing this book. Anywhere I post it on social media, we'll also have that Kickstarter link in it as well. So once again, big shout out to Wells for stopping in and just chatting with us. Thank you for everyone in the chat for you know, asking questions. And I hope you guys have a fantastic Sunday. But most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.